Mouse Madness.
Yeah, good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media and Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning, 7:05 on April the 19th. Get up, it's time to rock. I hope you got all your taxes in. I hope that it was a good day for you yesterday. Hey, today, Linda is on assignment. Tax day. Even though it's not supposed to be called tax day. Yesterday. Maybe took too much out of her. No, I'm just kidding. She's off today doing a lot of things, but I'm always here with Bad Bob.
And good morning, sir.
Bad Bob, I'm hearing something in my earphones here. It's feeling, you know, maybe it's turned up a little bit loud or something. I'm not sure. But, you know, in case I haven't given you enough loves here, and I haven't, we couldn't do this without Bad Bob. He's coming in now. He's doing the news as we're training a couple of other people. He comes and he does our show. He comes and he's doing the wiring for the board. Bad Bob, you are our hero.
Yeah, I hear it too. We got a buzz. We have a bug in the system. We'll see about
is that just in my, is that just is that,
it's a little buzz.
Is a little buzz. Is that just in my ears or is that going out over the air?
I don't know, but we'll find it.
Okay. If you hear a little buzz coming out over the radio, please give us a call here and we'll just kind of start turning things down because as we're putting in new equipment, sometimes those things happen. Anyway, what a day today. What a show today we're going to have. We've got any number of things that are going to happen. First, we're going to be welcoming back Sergeant Patrick Modisett, and he's just returned from Afghanistan this last month. We're going to be talking to some representatives of a lung affair, talking about cancer awareness. And, of course, we're going to continue day two of emergency preparedness. But there's a number of other things that are going on also that we need to talk about. You know, there's going to be a city council meeting tonight, my friends. You need to be there. It's going to be a real interesting meeting. The one they had last night moved us a little bit closer to getting Costco bought, it appears. They voted 4-1 to adopt a policy regulating, 4-1 to look at buying Costco. The city council, that the redevelopment agency money is available to buy the big box store. The council also declared the current California street police headquarters a major roadblock to long-term revitalization. I think you're right. If you've ever been in a police department, it's falling apart. I mean, when the ceiling comes in and the water fountain catches on fire. Dick Dickerson, Vice Mayor, cast a lone vote against it. He's having a problem about moving this money or using this money for that. Now, other things that happened yesterday and last night included the library leaflet lean. You know, remember that had a big fight over, can you put leaflets out at the library? Can you put tables out there and hand out things? And the library was saying, no, you can't. Well, except under certain circumstances. Well, that's the first time you've seen the ACLU and the Tea Party get together, and they were both here on the show discussing why that is unconstitutional. But they voted last night, the city council voted 4-1 to adopt a policy regulating the pamphlets after hearing from more than a half dozen speakers. Now, Jones, Patrick Jones, voted against it. He believes this is a policy limiting free speech. What this is going to do is it's going to lead to more lawsuits, my friends. I can promise you right now. Other things happening, the S&P warning, if we don't fix our deficit, our credit rating is going to go to abnormal. I don't know if that's, Bob, I don't know if that's a rating, but that's what it means. And this has finally, I hope, gotten people's attention. We are printing so much money. We have our federal deficit is so bad that Standard & Poor's lowered its long-term outlook for the federal government's fiscal health from stable to negative and warned of serious consequences if lawmakers failed to reach a deal. Now, both sides are fighting and pointing fingers at each other, but as they say, no, there's enough blame to go around. The president is the leader. He should get a lot of this blame. And then Congress, for sitting on their hands, are continuing to spend money and not make any changes. More to follow on this. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got our first guest coming in. But there's something else I want to talk about. This city council tonight at 6 p.m., at the council chambers, they're going to be talking about closing City Hall and the Convention Center. And there's more to this than meets the eye. Join us after these messages. This is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back to Free. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, and Carl and Abbott. And Linda is on assignment today. We're going to get the weather to you here in a couple minutes. It is 7:13 on April the 19th. You know, one of the things we were talking about at the city council was some of the changes about closing City Hall. And then I'm just going to throw out just one thing here, and then I'm going to get to our guest. They're looking at closing closing City Hall down one day a week. Now, if that happens, and I haven't seen this in the paper, I don't know, maybe it has been or some other place, but if you close down City Hall one day a week, 4 days a month, there's an assumption then that people become a three-quarter employee. If it's a three-quarter employee, this changes things. One, employees are going to have to pay more for their benefits. It won't bridge everything that's going to happen with the deficit, but they're going to have to pay more, maybe up to 25% more on their benefits if they're working at City Hall because they're off that one day a week. That could be a huge change, and nobody's mentioned this yet. I hope that comes up tonight. The other thing, too, is lawsuit against REU. If they win this class action lawsuit, that's $6.2 million out of the general fund. That's McNeil lawsuit there. Now, these are just things you got to be thinking about. Now, let's talk. And one more thing to think about before we move on to a lot. Well, I don't know if it's a lot more positive type news. Is the vehicle licensing fees. If that is not extended some way, that's $3 million out of the budget right here in Shasta County. So, and also with that, moving on, Jimmy, welcome back, Jimmy. It's good to have you back. I know you've been out working somewhere far, far away. Now, to ask me to explain the city council, and one of you all did, I can't do that in just 2 hours. Maybe if we work real hard at it. Okay, on to good things. I'm joined now by Sarah Erickson, who heads up the Lung Affair, and Ida Danuka. Mm-hmm. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, great. They're here because we're talking about
lung cancer awareness.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Sarah, talk to us about your organization.
Basically, we're a nonprofit organization that promotes awareness about lung cancer to help with prevention and to help with promoting school programs for smoking cessation or to educate teenagers and middle schoolers to not smoke. And basically, the reason why we started this nonprofit organization is that lung cancer is the number one killer of all cancers. And in Shasta County, it's actually one of the highest mortality rates. This year, 222,000 people will be diagnosed with lung cancer.
Now, that's throughout the United States, right?
Throughout the United States, yes. Okay. And 157,000 will die from the disease.
Now, lung cancer is, when we say lung cancer, this is caused by so many different things, though, right?
Yeah, the most common cause, obviously, is cigarette smoking, but mm-hmm. radon, asbestos, daily things we expose ourselves to, such as car exhaust, even natural burning things can cause lung cancer as well.
Okay, and how does that rate? And I hate to put this as rating about how many people are dying, but as a cause of death in the United States, where does lung cancer fall into?
It's number two, number one of killer of all cancers. It kills more people than breast, colon, prostate, melanoma, and pancreatic combined.
Okay, now that's for people that die of cancer. Yes. What's number? What's the first one?
Cardiovascular disease is still
okay,
number one killer.
Okay, that's yes. Heart disease yes. is the first, but cancer then and lung cancer is the number two number killer two. In the United States. Is it preventable?
Yes, and lung cancer is actually the most preventable cancer of all cancers.
Okay, and why is that?
Because basically the things that cause cancer are things we do to ourselves, such as cigarette smoking, which causes 90% of all lung cancers, and also exposure to asbestos, radon, depleted uranium, things that our veterans are exposed to.
Okay. When you say, how can we test ourselves to see if we've got the early stages? I guess if you find it in early stages, is it treatable?
In early stages, it is treatable, but you have a 15% chance of being diagnosed in stages 1 and 2 when it is treatable. Most cancers are diagnosed in stages 3 and 4 because they don't present symptoms until late stages. And right now, the only good thing that we have going is the new studies on our spiral CTs. There was a new study done last year in November that all the data came out that spiral CTs have significantly reduced the mortality rate.
What's a spiral CT?
It's a basic CT. It's not like a regular
CT.
A CAT scan. Sorry.
Okay.
And it's a low dose.
Some people may not be up on these terms like
True.
I am.
Sorry. But it's a low dose radiation type CAT scan.
Okay. Now I've heard this. The spiral CT is really good at finding other things too. I mean, it can pick up. I mean, it's an early warning device.
Yes, and it's much more effective than a regular X-ray. But, of course, there always are concerns that it is picking up other things. But it's the same thing with diagnostic mammography. With breast cancer, it also picks up benign nodules as well as...
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to introduce Ida Danuka about something she's done that's pretty spectacular, too, that has to do with this. This is Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio on KCNR. It's 7:19 in the morning on April the 19th. It's going to be a great day today. We're going to talk about that, too, when we get back. This is Free Fire Radio. 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, and Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's on assignment today at 7:22 in the morning on April the 19th. And you know what? Today is going to be partly sunny with a high near 58. Light winds becoming southwest between 11 and 14 miles per hour. And tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 41. Wednesday, we may have a 40% chance of rain. We'll find out what happens when the wind blows it in there. But today looks like it could be a pretty good day. And the weather report is always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. A great place to go. 12 miles towards Shingletown out of Palo Cedro. It's quick to get there. The food is just outstanding. The service is. You just got to be there to experience Anselmo's. Great food, great service, great wine. I can't think of a better place. You know, it's open for lunches, you know, brunches on the weekend and dinners. It's a wonderful place, and they have a music series. And we'll talk more about that this week. And my guest today on this segment, Sarah Erickson from The Lung Affair, and now Ida Danuka. Was I close then? Okay, let me turn you on there.
Okay.
All right, okay. Now, you're here because you've done something that's helped people with cancer awareness, too. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I worked with my school's Interact Club, which is the high school version of Rotary, to set up a lung cancer awareness week to spread awareness about lung cancer and also to spread awareness about how smoking cessation can help with your chances for lung cancer and smoking...
Deep breath. We're okay. Just like we did on the break.
Yeah. And just spread information about smoking cessation as well.
Okay. Now, you go to UPrep, which is a great school. We've had your principal and superintendent here.
Yeah.
I love having her on. We could have her on every week and talk about education. You know, one of the things, too, is you say you're with the Interact Club, which is the school version of the Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, do a lot of kids smoke on campus? Or not on campus, but a lot of kids that go to school smoke?
Not at UPrep. UPrep is not a very high-risk school for smoking.
Okay, but do you think that is that a problem, you think, with high school kids?
Possibly more in public schools.
Uh-huh.
I do believe that it's not quite as popular as some people might think, but it definitely is still something that should be addressed because a lot of kids aren't fully educated about it. They may hear that smoking isn't a good thing to do, but it's always good to remind them why.
And a lot of times they see their parents smoking, mm-hmm. and their friends. Okay, now, so why did you decide to do this for The Lung Affair?
Well, my parents are doctors, and my mom sees a lot of lung cancer cases, and I thought it would be an interesting thing to do. We were offered a chance to work on our own project for Interact, so we could do our own volunteer experiences for school. And I thought this would be an interesting thing, something I could personally relate to, that I could really help with. And it was a fun experience helping set this up, and it was nice to know that I was trying to educate students and spread awareness about a disease that really does affect a lot of people.
How old are you?
15.
15. So, Sarah, how was this? I mean, was this pretty cool?
It was really good. Ida did a wonderful job. Hopefully next year we're trying to work on getting on a big school assembly schedule for all the public schools to spread a little bit more awareness, because the current statistics for teen smoking is 18.6% in just Shasta County, which is pretty significant. So we want to help try to educate children to not smoke and, you know, teach them why they shouldn't smoke.
Right. I understand that. Now, you know, 18%, has that gone up or down? I know they It seems to me that it's gone down.
Yes, it has gone down a little bit.
Okay.
It's getting there with all the new Surgeon General warnings that are put on packaging. So that is helping, but I think more needs to be done.
Okay. Well, that's great. Okay, what's the next step for the lung affair?
Obviously, the next step, our big thing, is the school program. Hopefully, we can get more awareness raised. And we're trying to raise enough money to start being able to help people afford the spiral CT scans we were talking about earlier. Because they're not paid for by insurance companies, and most people can't pay out of pocket.
Okay, now why aren't they paid for by the insurance companies?
Cost. That's what it all comes down to, is cost.
And but are they a proven benefit for people?
The study was just done last year. It came out in November that it has shown a great significant benefit. It just needs to be more widely accepted. It took mammograms to be accepted, you know, and colonoscopy,
sure.
Same thing.
What's the cost of this as a compared to a regular lung X-ray?
A CT scan can cost anywhere from $300 to $1,000, where a chest CT is probably $50.
Okay. So the thing is, it's cost then?
It is cost, yes.
Hmm.
With everything else.
Something to be talked about later on in one of our shows. Now, you're going to be coming back on a regular basis, Sarah.
Yes.
And you're going to be talking about cancer awareness and this. Which Linda and I just, you know, we think that people, it's prevention is what is going to, what's going to pay off in the long run. This is one thing that I agree with. I think everybody agrees with, all sides, is if we can prevent it, it's going to be the way that's going to drive down health costs if people live longer and are healthier. And Eva, you know, this is really good for what you're doing. I mean, you know, I've run into so many young people like yourself that do more than they have to, that try to, you know, want to help their community. What's your next program project?
Next project altogether, or with the lung affair?
Well, just any project you're working on. You know, I know because everybody has something they're working on over there.
Well, I regularly volunteer with the Interact Club throughout the year, and I volunteer at Turtle Bay over the summer as well.
Okay.
And I would like to do more work with the lung affair, see if I can do more school activities about prevention and just lung cancer awareness.
Okay. Well, a very capable young woman here.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So we're going to have you on again, I believe, next month. Any last thoughts here from Lung Affair?
Nope, we'll be on next month, and next month we're going to bring Dr. Hecht on to talk a little more about CT scans.
Okay, Dr.
Hecht.
And he does, or she does?
He is a radiologist at Advanced Imaging.
Okay, and he'll be talking about the CT scans, or just scans in general?
CT scans.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming in today, and it was a pleasure meeting you.
It was a pleasure
Thank you for what you do, you know, Eva. This is the kind of thing is we just love having, you know, young people, our teenagers, you know, involved in this. And having a club that's like the Rotary Club, which is kind of a business club, is kind of cool, too. I mean, that it teaches, I imagine it teaches business and teaches practices like that. So, again, thank you so much for what you did with the Lung Affair. And, Sarah, thanks for coming in today. Now, we come back, we've got Sergeant Patrick Modisette, just got back from Afghanistan. We're going to welcome him home, talk to him about what's going on over there and what's going on back here with him. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Radio on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Carl and the Bot. Linda's on assignment today at 7:35 on April the 19th. It is about 50 degrees. It's about 50 degrees today, Bad Bob, right now. And we're going to have a partly sunny day with a high near 58. This portion of the show is brought to you by B&T Satellite. B&T Satellite puts in Dish Satellite. They are a local company. Do not call the 800 number. Do not call the 800 number. It goes someplace else. Call 244-1988. Talk to Doug Tooley, who himself is a veteran. He's been in business since 1985. Does great work. Guarantees his work. He's easy to get a hold of. And if there's any concerns, he's the one you need to talk to at 244-1988. Ask him about that free HD. 244-1988. Okay, now we're honored to have a guest, you know, in our studio. And I was fortunate enough to be there the day that Sergeant Patrick Modisette came home from Afghanistan. Good morning, Sergeant.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm great, in fact. I'm always happy to welcome home heroes.
Thank you very much.
And you are. Anybody that serves our country is a hero. Now, you're with the California National Guard.
That is correct.
And this happened because your beautiful wife, Christine,
said, it's Christine, right?
Yeah,
she sent an email.
She's beautiful. You're correct.
Yeah, she absolutely is. And she sent an email to our mayor, Missy MacArthur, and said, "Hey, my husband's coming home. Is there, is there anybody to greet him?" Well, she gets a hold of me, and I, of course, turn around and get a hold of Jeff from the Patriot Guard
Riders.
And, of course, boom, there's a bunch of people come running out when they heard you were coming home. So, welcome home.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So how long were you in Afghanistan?
I was in Afghanistan a total of 10 and a half months.
Okay.
And it was a year-long total deployment with the pre-training run-up there at Fort Hood, Texas.
Okay, let's talk about a little bit about you. Okay. Where are you from?
Originally from the Bay Area, Santa Fe, California. And born and raised, went to parochial school and high school there, and started working in EMS, fire service, and got hired on with Cal Fire and was working in the fire service for a couple years. Decided medical was the direction I wanted to take it in, so I wanted to go to paramedic school, and I found a program up here at College Siskiyous up at Owee, California, and attended that paramedic school. And just fell in love with Northern California so much that my in-laws, they've got a place up in Dunsmuir. We've got a place up in Dunsmuir now, and moved back to the Bay Area and worked as a medic down there, but always wanted to get back up to the Northern California Redding area. So I joined the National Guard after that and wanted to go to Afghanistan as a flight medic. That really interested me to serve and to do my part. I'd always thought about it through high school and mid-20s, but other things always came up, other opportunities. But I thought this was just the right time now, and my wife and I talked it over and decided, hey, let's do this. So I went ahead and enlisted and joined in the Army National Guard at 31 years of age, if you could believe that. I know, crazy. So
it's a little bit older than most people do, but I think they're taking up to, what, 36 now?
Yeah, with the war, yeah. They're
depending, I think, on what job it is.
On what job it is, absolutely.
And you were trained already. You came in as a trained medic. Essentially. I mean, you didn't know especially the Army way of doing things, but you were trained.
Correct. You know? And I found a National Guard unit because I wanted to fly. I wanted to go as a flight medic. Also, California does a lot more things than just the Army deployment side. We do fire rescue. We do search and rescue, floods, earthquakes. And so we're on call 24/7. Throughout the state of California out of Sacramento. So that interested me as far as doing something on the side and honing my skills and also serving my country, something that I wanted to do my whole life. But we decided, so I get the call to go to Afghanistan. About that time, I had a little boy. So
that's right.
That all changed, and the plan was to have children after I got back. So in lieu of that, we decided to move up to Redding, make life a little easier while I was gone. My wife's parents had moved up here, and some of her family members, her sisters, and it was a lot easier transition for her. So we decided to make a go of it up here, and couldn't be happier with Redding area.
Now, did you have your son? Did you say or
yes, son, Connor.
Okay, so you had Connor before you left.
No? Yes, that is correct.
Okay,
Connor's 3 years old now. So
all right.
We had Connor as soon as I got back from basic training. So you can imagine.
Well, no, I can't imagine that because many of our Marines when they come back home get married and their wives get pregnant after being gone for 12 weeks. I said, maybe something in the water.
It's something in the water or the potatoes. I'm not sure.
Not sure. Okay, look, we're going to take a quick break here. Our guest is Sergeant Patrick Modestetti. He's with the California National Guard. He is a combat medic. An air medic?
Flight medic.
A flight medic. And we're going to talk about his time in Afghanistan and what he saw. And he has some very, very positive things to say about his tour. This is Carl Lindebot. And this is Free Fire Radio. Yeah, it's Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's on assignment. 7:43 in the morning on April the 19th. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. It's Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. And on Friday, we're going to have, at noontime there, our emergency preparedness
I guess you can say, demonstration or extravaganza, where we're going to show everything that we've been talking about as far as go bags and those types of materials you might need in case of an emergency. Also, it's got the finest coffee shop there at Espresso Joe's and the finest walk-in humidor in the state. Right there at Tobacco and Brew, and Joe and Shelley do so much for this community that it is just an honor to know them. They've helped our veterans. They've helped so many people in need in our community there at Tobacco and Brew. Okay, you know, our guest today is speaking of somebody that does a lot for our community and our nation. You know, and most of our heroes that do that don't think of it like that, but we do. Sergeant Patrick Modisette, who is a flight medic,
correct,
with the California National Guard, and we've talked about where he came from and came home from leave, and oh my gosh, now we're going to have a baby, and now you're getting ready, and so you've deployed to Afghanistan.
Yes.
What part?
I went to the west part of Afghanistan, RC West, and our flagpole was in Shindan. I was stationed farther north in Herat. It's the third largest city in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And we went ahead and our company, 12th Ship Medevac Company, manned six FOBs as far as north as Kunduz.
That's forward operating bases.
And Bala Maghrad, Herat, Shindan, Shah Tehran, and Farah. So we took care of the entire west coast of Afghanistan.
The fact that you can pronounce all those is spectacular too, because none of our news people can, nor can I. Now, when you're there and you're as a flight medic, how busy were you when you were there?
I was part of a special unit, went to a Marine forward operating base, Special Forces base. There was 18 pilots, crew chiefs, and medics. So we had a great opportunity to work closely with the guys that were on the ground, face-to-face, doing the job. So we were fortunate, at least I felt like I was, to do that mission. Our call volume was, I believe, total in RC West wasn't as busy as it was in other parts of the country, but it was about 400 medevac missions completed for the 10 months we were there, and of that, there was 280 just in our FOB alone.
Okay, now, frankly, I'm happy, you know, that we don't have a lot of medevac missions, because that means you have a lot, that means people are getting hurt.
Correct.
Tell us about your average mission.
The missions there, as far as the United States service members, I would say was only about 30% of our call volume. And the rest were local nationals and Afghan National Army, Afghan National Police. And of that, I want to say 25 to 30% of that were pediatric. A lot of children, unfortunately. But
These are children that were injured or
correct.
Sick? Or
mostly injured and sometimes sick. But what was going on there, and it just I had a new way of looking how things work, because I joined the Army. I kind of went there to say, I fix the holes, I don't make them. So I just wanted to go over there and help our soldiers over there. I found out that we were helping, you know, more of the local nationals and their Army. And what's happening is NATO forces are letting the Afghan national people run their own country, at least in our region of the area. Mm-hmm. And they're establishing to do that. The children, which was difficult, the Taliban really direct them and recruit them to make bombs and create blasting caps and just their lack of appreciation for life, unfortunately. So it kind of changed my view of what goes on over there. Women have no rights. Children have no rights. Unless you're the first couple born men, you really
people
don't
realize just how people, women are chattel.
They really are. In fact, what really put the dot on the nail there was in Herat, there's actual prison that is designed for women, that if a senior male commits a crime, he can send his wife to serve time.
No.
And there's a prison specifically
tell
for
me
that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So
okay.
That's just, and that's the way of life that they have there. So, I mean, I don't know how well that would work here in California, but
I doubt it would go over very well.
All
of us are looking at each other that are married and go, yeah, we know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Okay, look, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a break a little bit early. You had a mission you were going to talk about.
And yes.
We'll get that when we come back. And then at your level, sergeant that was there for 10 months, what you think about what's going on in Afghanistan, too. We'll get to that as soon as we get back from these messages. This is Carl Lindabot. It's 7:48 in the morning. This is KCNR 1460, and this is Free Fire Radio. Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl Linda Botland is on assignment. It's 50 degrees out there. It's 751 in here on April the 19th. Our guest is Sergeant Patrick Monisette, who was a medic in air.
Combat flight medic.
Combat flight medic.
We'll get it down.
Yeah, I'll get it down. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking Marine Corps stuff may have to change, and it's not easy at my age. California National Guard, we really enjoyed you being on. One of the reasons, you know, I saw you, and thank you so much for coming on the show, is that we forget. We forget we're in two wars, and three now in Libya, because we're still having things to
Absolutely.
Do in Libya. And, you know, and people go, you know, what are we going to do on this day? What are we going to do? It's, you know, Memorial Day is coming up. And it's like, hey, we got a lot of people out there.
Correct.
So thank you so much for your service. Now, tell us a story quick. You were telling us about a mission.
One mission we ran that just kind of hit home. One of my crew chiefs, Sergeant Schofield, was a former Modesto police officer, retired out of 20 years, and been serving the California National Guard his whole life, second deployment in Afghanistan. So in the flying on a mission in the back, it's just myself and my crew chief. Crew chief's more of a mechanic, and he protects me with his weapons, and I work through the medical stuff, and then we've got two pilots flying the aircraft. But we get a mission on a Marine we picked up, a gunshot wound, and we're coming back, and this guy's beat up pretty bad, but he's coherent and he's talking to us. And I've actually picked him up. This is my second time I've picked this certain Marine up, and we're talking, and he knows I'm from California. I know, these guys are crazy out there. And he keeps looking at my crew chief. And I'm giving him payments, and I'm addressing his wounds, and we're trying to understand what's going on. I'm like, he looks up, and he goes, hey, I know you. What's your name? And, you know, Mike goes, hey, I'm the SCO dog. That's what, you know, his call sign, his self-made call sign up is. And he goes, Sergeant Schofield? And we all kind of stop. I mean, the pilots who are facing forward kind of look back and look and see what's going on. He goes, hey, I remember you. And Schofield goes, from where? He's all, you used to be a cop. And this was a troubled teen about 18 years ago. His parents had passed away, and he had moved in with his grandfather. And his grandfather was at his wit's end, called the Modesto Police Department, and Officer Schofield came out there and basically told Grandpa to tune him up a little bit, you know. And a couple days later, he gets a phone call to go back out to the house. And poor Mike, you know, Schofield's thinking, oh, boy, what'd I do? The grandfather really set him off. Well, turns out they get out there, and they had a talking to, and the boy decided, hey, you know what, you're right. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to go to school. Found out a couple years later, he enlisted into the Marine Corps, was now a gunny sergeant for United States
Marine,
gunnery sergeant with a wife and three kids, living happily in Southern California. And we're sitting there in the aircraft after this Marine is blown up, and you know, he's looking at me and says, hey, you changed my life, and thank you. And here he was,
Sergeant Schofield,
here we were, right. Schofield, 18 years later, was in the back helping him out again.
Is that something?
And it just goes to show how small this world is.
That just ran shivers through my body. That is, you know, how one thing happens, and it just has such a huge effect. Let's go to the phones here. Hey, Jimmy.
Thanks for calling. You're on live.
Good morning. Wow, that was a...
Was that a story or what?
That was something else. Yeah, that's a small world. But I just want to, you know, thank the sergeant for his service. And, you know, I thought another story that he was talking about was really interesting, too, that, you know, some of the things like men's wives can serve time in prison. You know, a lot of people in the States don't know stuff like that, and I just thought it was really interesting that, you know, he's letting us know about some of the conditions of society over there and, you know, what our troops are doing over there. So I just want to give you a really big thumbs up and say thanks.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Jimmy, welcome back.
Okay, yeah. All right, guys.
All
and,
right.
Yeah, it's, you know, being away from home, too, is, you know, not a lot of people know about that. And that's another big thumbs up you guys get, too. So thanks for the good job you guys are doing, and I'll listen to the rest off the air.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
Very good. Thank you so much.
And he's just indicative of so many other people here. One of the comments in the chat room was, about serving time, a woman serving time for her husband said, you know, if I was over there, I think I'd try to convince my husband to be a suicide bomber. So that was good, Angel. So, okay. We've got just a couple minutes left here, about three minutes. I want to ask you about one real quick, is that the golden hour that they talk about. Could you just explain that very briefly to our...
The golden hour is a medical term as far as when the injury occurs, we try to get him into a trauma room and have a trauma surgeon work on that patient within 1 hour of when the actual injury occurs. Now, it works really well over here in the United States. It was a military formulation that's gone over to the civilian world, and it works well because we've got so many resources available to get to hospitals and so on. Unfortunately, over there in Afghanistan, by the time we get a call, it can take up to 10 minutes before we're even notified from the injury. Then we've got to get out there, which could be another 20 to 30, sometimes 45 minutes, because the terrain is so harsh. And then whether or not the LZ, the landing zone, is secure, they're going to have to move a patient out. But we try to get them into an operating room, a trauma surgeon, within the first hour.
And it's good news usually if you can do that.
Yes, and that gives it the best percentage for survivability. And
plus, your training is spectacular.
Yes.
And once you get them onto a medevac.
Yeah, what's unique about California National Guard and most National Guard units is the medics are paramedics, so the level of training is a lot higher, whereas a regular Army medic is just an EMT combat medic that can push some drugs. So we've got a lot of paramedics that do a lot of good jobs and can work at a higher level. Plus, over there, it's the protocols are amazing. I mean, I'm set with the set protocols here in Shasta County in Northern California, and over there, it's kind of like you're it. So there is no trauma doc, there is no orthopedic surgeon, it's me and it's my crew chief who is in the medical personnel that we've trained up. So it's a real team effort as far as both of our guys going back there, trying to keep these guys alive and sometimes doing some stuff that we wouldn't normally feel comfortable with. But
you have to do what you have to do.
You have to do what you have to do.
You know, we really want to thank you for a couple of reasons. One, for coming in today and sharing with us. And you know what? I'd like to probably have you back on again because this is kind of like just scratching the surface. We probably at least another half hour
Absolutely.
That we can talk with you about. And your service, Sergeant Modisette, Patrick Modisette, and your wife, Christine, and your son, Connor.
Yes.
We're so happy you live in our area up here.
I'm happy to be here. This is a great...
We're proud of you.
Great place to live.
Well, you know what? Next time, I'd like to do is have you come in with your beautiful wife and talk about... You know, while you're away, and how that affects the family and the son. I mean, a lot of us who've been in the service, we've all had multiple deployments. And I remember my daughter when I came back home after my first long deployment, is she knew me because my wife would show her a picture of me, mm-hmm. and that was Daddy was the picture of me, and that was kind of like that was hard. So anyway. Thank you so much for your service. Thanks for coming in today. And we'll have you back on soon if you'd like to come back.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Great. Okay.
Hey,
when we come back from our from the news, we're going to have Mark Kent on again. We're going to be talking about emergency preparedness day 2. Things we have to do if it's longer than just a couple of hours and we have to leave our area. This is Carl Lindebot. Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460.
KCNR Shasta Redding. Fox News Radio.
Okay. KCNR 1460 on our 8 o'clock hour. It's Carl and Linda Bott, 8:05 on April the 19th. Linda is on assignment today. Hey, the weather today, it's 50 degrees outside right now, and it's partly sunny. It's going to be partly sunny today with some light winds. They could pick up the winds later on today. And tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 41. Tomorrow, a 40% chance of rain. You know what? A little bit of rain, you know, keeps going. Oh, bad ball. Look up the lake levels. Would you please? Somebody caught me the other day and said, hey, I'd love to hear the lake levels every day, and I think we could do something like that for our audience. We'll give that at some point. Let's see what else is going on. Now, KIXE, Channel 9, Art, Wine, and Travel Auction. Tonight and tomorrow, it's going to be live. It's going to be, they're going to televise live their Art, Wine, and Travel Auction. They're going to be featuring local artists, regional vintners, and travel getaways. And you can go to their website there at KIXE and check out everything. And you can make early bids or you can bid during the show. So you got to go to www.kixe.org or call Vicki at 243-5493. That's 243-5493. And ask her about the Art, Wine, and Travel Auction. This is a great way. First of all, it's a great way to support our local PBS station, and you can get some great deals. Let me tell you, I mean actually really get great deals. We have furniture in our office now from an auction last year on KIC. So trust me, they have really wonderful stuff there. All right, let's get this thing off. We've got Mark Kent back today.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. You know, yesterday was day one, and I think one of the things we want of emergency preparedness. This whole week, on Thursday, Chief Peter Hansen's going to be on. He's going to be addressing some of the emergency preparedness. And one of the things about being prepared, of course, is a police station that doesn't fall down in a high wind. We won't probably get into that, but that's big things in the news lately.
Only in Kansas.
Only in Kansas. We're going to be talking, Red Cross is also going to be on Thursday to be talking about their emergency preparedness. We're going to be talking all week about this, things you need. We've had phone calls from people. We've had emails from people who think this is great, and can they get copies of the shows? Well, yes, we can make arrangements for that. Friday also at Tobacco and Brew at high noon at 12 o'clock, we're going to have a lot of this gear laid out. We're going to be talking about emergency preparedness. We're going to have handouts.
Absolutely.
With checklists. All these will be available to people that come down there. And I urge you to tell your friends about this and to come on down and see what's going on at Friday at noon at Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. There's parking in the rear there. Okay, Mark.
Well, you know, I'd like to kind of recap on yesterday a little bit and maybe add to it. You know, this subject is so expansive. It's kind of like eating an elephant, you know. It's not something you can swallow all at once, but you want to just keep taking little bites of it till you get it done. And, you know, dreading is always worse than doing. So the first thing is always getting that mental, taking that first mental step of actually starting a plan. Going over our emergency evacuation plan, you know, I want to kind of hit some highlights here when you're preparing a plan. You know, there's some important points to remember that we should go over. One is, you know, maybe do a floor plan of your house and plan some escape routes prior to in case of a fire or something like that in the house. You know where your gas shutoff valves are, your water, electricity. You know, is there any people that have medical conditions or diabetes, you know, that you need to worry about? And I would do an inventory of your house as well. You know, you might only have 5 minutes to get out of there. Like, you know, I remember a few years ago when we had the fires around here, I was actually had my office at my house, and I was sitting in there, you know, typing on the computer, and I looked up over the ridge, and there's about a 30-foot flame shooting up over the top of the ridge. And it was like, holy moly, we got to go, you know. And we had 5 minutes, and the sheriff was there. We had 5 minutes, and we had to go. So, I mean, here's my business. We had our computer hard drives all packed up within 2 minutes. You know, we had, you know, countless data that we had to, you know, save. So those are the kind of things you want to be thinking about. Is if you have to move out, what are you going to take with you real quick? You might put a checklist together, okay? You know, the other things that you should do is think about routes of where, you know, you're going to go when you evacuate. You know, you might have one or two routes mapped out because, you know, one of the routes might be blocked off. That's how it was at our house in this particular fire, is that, you know, the one way out to the freeway was totally blocked off. I mean, because that's where the fire was. So we had to go the other way. So, you know, when you're planning, you know, meeting places, you might think about evacuation centers as well. And we'll have a handout on this on Friday, you know.
Well, yeah, and Red Cross, and we got to take a break here. Red Cross is going to come up with a bunch of information about evacuation centers.
Right.
Now, let me reiterate this to all of our listeners. I know you're interested in this. We're getting a lot of new people in the chat room. A lot of people are sharing this with their friends. Let's think two things. Let's think wildfires in Texas where people are literally running down the streets, my friends, running down the streets to get in cars. They're pushing grandma down the street with her hair streaming behind her, putting her in a car, and off they go. Were they prepared? It doesn't look like it. And what about the tornadoes that just went through North Carolina? Horrendous loss of life. Things destroyed. People are having to move away. People are having to get out of there. And this one guy says, they said, leave this area. And he said, I did. He said, My trailer's gone.
Right.
My mobile home is gone.
Right.
So these are things that you need to plan for. Now we got to take a quick break. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio, right here. It's 8:11. It's 50 degrees. It's April 19th, and this is Free Fire Radio. I fell into that ring of fire. Hey, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. 8:15 in the morning on April the 19th. It's 50 degrees outside. The weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. You know what? The weather is great up at Anselmo's. Go up there for lunch. Great lunches, great service. You know, I mean, the food is just extraordinary. And then dinners, of course. And then the music series on the weekends is just, you know, spectacular also. We'll be talking about that tomorrow and the next day also about what's going on up there as far as music. But just to go up there for brunch, and it's a great day today, go on, just run on up there and see it. You know, somebody just made a comment in the chat room, and yes, I do read the chat room, man, oh man, is that, wasn't the show on yesterday? No, the show wasn't on yesterday. The first day of emergency preparedness was yesterday. There's different things each day of this week, including Red Cross, the police, the whole thing. And but the bottom line on this is, from the response we have from people, is that you can't get everything in one day.
Correct.
You just can't get everything in one day, or maybe even a week.
This is a process. There's no question.
That's right. But one of the things you can do is start learning about those things. And there's been good comments in here about what happens at work and all that. But let's go back to where we were at there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I wanted to cover, too, that we hadn't gone over was choosing an out-of-area contact. That's one thing that, you know, if your family's local and all the, you know, everybody's separated, you might have somebody that's out of the affected area, you know, a relative in Missouri or Oregon or whatever, that everybody should know to call if they can't communicate with each other. That way you can have a centralized point of communication that can tell everybody where they're at, that type of thing. And I think that's a should be a part of the plan.
And, you know, and that's a big thing, is that, you know, if you got your kids scattered around and they can't get a hold of us directly, or they're on the other sides, is that, gosh, who do we talk to? I mean, if you have phones.
Right, right.
That's the other thing. That's a huge if.
Absolutely.
Because as people pointed out, the priority to getting phone lines back is going to be to the police in an emergency.
Yeah, what's going to happen if you don't have a cell phone? You know, I mean, that's a problem, you know. So that's something. And another thing, too, is that maybe in part of the plan, you know, come up with specific times where everybody should be checking in, so that, you know, you have much more of a likelihood of actually connecting. So the next thing I would think about would be a rallying point for the family. If you're separated, or people at work or at school, you know, think about several rallying points or places to meet. Think about it carefully. I mean, you might have several places that you might designate. For example, if the bridge is out going one way, or, you know, or the disaster is going the other way, you know, the fires block the road this way, and come up with some different plans. That
you should have at a minimum both sides of the river.
Absolutely.
Here.
You know, at least two routes. Absolutely. So, and, you know, get your whole family involved in this process, so that you're all talking about this, so that if the event does occur, you know, you're not trying to relay all this information to somebody right then and there when you don't have any time to do it. So, you know, that's the thing, is get this plan established prior to, you know, your evacuation scenario, and make sure that everybody has access to the 72-hour kit. Because, you know, it's important to understand that 72-hour kit is kind of a lifeline, because it's been shown that the first 72 hours of an emergency is the worst. That's where you lose the contact. That's where there's, no services available. You know, that's where you're standing out on the roof with a sign saying help to the helicopters as they fly over 3 days later. You know, that,
and you'll be world. Here's your 5 minutes of fame, as they put it on.
Yeah,
place is not hit. Yeah, because they do that.
Absolutely. So, you know, that, you know, what you don't want to be is, you don't want to have that be your 5 minutes on YouTube.
there you go.
Because, you know, it's not going to look good with your friends when you're standing out there with a help sign. You know, and you know, so I just have a problem with the victim mentality. And in order to get out of that victim mentality, you got to start taking responsibility. Personal responsibility and being self-reliant, because once you take that on, then all of a sudden you're responsible for making all these plans and taking care of your family, and that just makes it better for everybody in the long run. Nobody's sitting around waiting for somebody to help them. So this is a process. It takes some time, and there's a lot of things to cover. This goes on and on and on and on, because, you know, we're starting out with an emergency evacuation plan here, you know, on one event, but this could turn into an extended event. I mean, let's say we look at the tsunami in Japan right now. I mean, those guys are going to be not up and running for years. I mean, it's wiped everything out. So, you know, the 72 hours, the start, after that, we need to start thinking about long-term plans. I mean, food storage and things like that. So,
and that's something we're going to take a quick break here, but, you know, and come back when we're going to start talking a little bit about that. Comments here, really good comments in the chat room. And you can get in the chat room if you just go to KCNR1460.com. And click on listen to the show, and you can just get right into the chat room. We don't have any special things you have to do to get in the chat room. Just be civil. Things like, you know, get the solar powered batteries, ones you can crank. You know, I've got a flashlight. You just shake the flashlight,
absolutely.
And it generates its own recharge that way. But the big point right here, and this is what we're talking about: if you have a plan, you won't panic.
That's
you just
absolutely
follow the plan.
Yeah, that's the old saying: those who fail to plan to fail. You know, that
type
of thing. And
that's
what we're talking about here. Is we got to start getting involved in a plan, because this could come from any side.
Okay, all right. We can take a break here. This is KCNR 1460. It's 8:20 in the morning on April the 19th. It's 50 degrees, and this is Free Fire Radio. Yeah, welcome back. Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's on assignment. 8:23 in the morning, April 19th. Hey, you know what? The Lake Shasta is 88% full. It's 20 feet from the top for the people that were asking about that. And we're going to try to do that every day if we can do that. I don't know what the lake level is, but it's just 20 feet from the top, whatever the top is. I assume the top's not 12,000 feet. So, and Bad Bob, you can probably tell me that later. Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by a B&T satellite. That's Dish Satellite. It's local. Doug Tooley, 244-1988. Do not call that 800 number. Call Doug at 244-1988, and he'll put in your Dish Satellite. He's a veteran. He's been in the business since 85. Money stays local. It is local. That's 244-1988. Our guest, Mark Kent. We're talking preparedness. And, yes, we will be talking about this all week with different guests, talking about what you can do to get prepared for an emergency. And people go, oh, gee, didn't we hear this? Yeah, and you're going to hear it all week, you know, not the whole show. It'll be 1 hour, half an hour, 1 hour a day. We're going to have Chief Peter Hansen. We're going to have the Red Cross in here. We're going to have a couple other people talking about how to get ready. And Friday at 12 noon at Tobacco and Brew at 2143 Hilltop Drive, we're going to have all this stuff laid out along with any type of handout you can possibly imagine that
Absolutely.
You can start your planning. Because people look around. Austin, Texas, the outskirts of Austin, people are running and screaming for help. North Carolina. What about the quake in 89? Look what happened in Japan. Are you ready to leave your house in 5 minutes? That's the question.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so important for everybody to understand that this can happen here just like it can happen anyplace else. You know, are we susceptible to an earthquake or fire or the dam breaking, a flood, a terrorist attack? You know, again, it's not something we're hoping for, but by gosh, we should be ready if it does happen. And
we don't hope that. You know what? I hope I never use my go
bag. Absolutely.
I really hope that. The only thing I do is I replace my granola bars or whatever, and I replace my water. And I hope I never have to use it, but if I do have to use it...
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things that, you know, if you don't ever have to use it, fine, but if you have to use it, you're going to be thankful that you did it and put it together, because it's critical. I mean, think about the world over, how many emergencies. I mean, we've just talked about some of the natural disasters. What about economic disasters, for example? I mean, hyperinflation or anything like that causes almost the same type of a situation where all the stores empty out. So, you know, it's one of those things that you should be prepared for any event, especially if not for you, at least for your kids. Because they can't prepare. They don't understand. So, you know, you got to take this thing and own it a little bit. One of the things in the bug-out bag that we should start out with is a list of contacts. I think every bug-out bag should have a list of contact numbers, you know, for everybody, school, sheriff, police, fire, so that you're not, you know, because if you have to run out the door and grab your bag, you know, you're not going to be probably packing the yellow pages with you. And that is unless you forgot your toilet paper. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be a very good thing, is grabbing that yellow page. So I would definitely have a little list of relatives, friends, neighbors, work, landlord, whoever you think you might have to contact, you know, and have a list of those numbers so that you can get a hold of them fairly quickly without trying to figure out what the numbers are. The other thing that I would think about is maybe if there's some important papers that you need to take with you. Let's say your house is burning down, like the deed to your house, for example, or birth certificates, maybe copies of those. Things like that, Social Security numbers, homeowner's insurance policy. If it's a fire, you might want to have access to your policy to call your insurance agent. Health insurance policies, ID cards, DMV registrations, et cetera. Anything that you think that if you lost would be a real problem.
Well, you know, and what you can do is you can put all these, like, into one plastic container.
Absolutely.
And again, part of your plan is if something happens, we have to get out of here.
Right.
And if there's two of you in the house or four of you in the house or five of you in the house, everybody's got a little group thing they do, or everybody's got their own thing they can do. Grab that. That goes into the car along with the go bags because now you've got, at least you've got your papers with you.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you went out to my truck right now, you would find that it's a survival storehouse. I mean, you should go out there, Carl. I mean, seriously, it's insane. I mean, I got stuff packed up to the roof in the back, you know, and I don't know, maybe that's a little overboard, but I don't think you can have overkill on this because, you know, when you get out there where there's nothing available and all of a sudden I'm sure glad I put that sleeping bag in there, or, you know, wow, I'm sure glad I have that water filter, you know, it starts to become, a good thing here at some point if you need it. Otherwise it's
well, you know, the thing is that people are going to have different levels of preparation.
Sure, absolutely.
The thing that we are talking about this week, and that's why we're going to have these checklists, so you can go as light or as heavy as you want to. But if you've got a small car and you think, okay, gosh, just what can I take? Well, you'll be able to figure that out because you're going to pack it and just say, okay, hey, This is what I'm gonna feel comfortable with.
The main thing is to have it available. Whatever you've got, have it available so you can get it quickly. A lot of people like to store, you know, it depends on what your situation is. I keep mine in my truck because my truck pretty much goes with me everywhere. Everywhere I go, I drive my truck. If I go take the car, I've got a survival bag in the car. So, you know, for me, that's the situation that I like. A lot of people, you know, if you're in an apartment in the city, you don't have a car, you might want to have it by your door, you know, where you're going out the door and you grab your bag and you can have enough stuff with you that you can make it work. So, your kit should be close at hand. That's the big thing. And each member of your family should have a 72-hour kit. And so forth. Now, enclosed in this should be, you know, clothing, matches, personal documents, all these other items that we just talked about. So,
we got like 30 seconds.
Okay, we got about
before the break.
Okay, very good. So you know, you should be thinking about your food, your water, children's clothing. You know, is it summer, winter, that type of thing. And start putting this together and pulling this together. And the more you do it, the more you think about it. What you'll discover is the more that you don't have. You start really becoming aware of how vulnerable you are. You know, if you don't have any of these things.
Okay, now we're talking emergency preparedness. We're talking about what happens if there is a disaster, which you should be picking up and going. There's a whole lot more to this. We're going to go to the news now. KCNR 1460. Welcome back to KCNR 1460 and Free Fire Radio with Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's on assignment today. It's 8:35 in the morning on April the 19th, and guess what? Yes, this portion of the show is brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop, right off Athens Avenue. I love this place. DC Tim and the Man in Black give great haircuts. They give a money off to those veterans that come in there. They give you a special discount to veterans. And as they go in there for a barbershop, you go in there, great conversation. It's a great place to hang out in. You get, you know, good magazines, autos, guns, you know, National Geographic, all those things. And here it is, my friends, man's last stronghold. I have seen women in there, of course, because they are treated very, very gentlemanly in there. But this is man's last stronghold. Go in there and get a haircut. Don't get your hair. Your hair's not going to get, you know, poofed. Go someplace else for that. Cypress Square Barbershop. Okay, our guest, Mark. Poofed. Poofed. Is that the right word, poofed?
I'm not sure because I've never poofed my hair.
I don't know. There's nobody in here who looks like they've had their hair poofed lately. But then again,
early 70s.
Early 70s, you might have had some poofing going on.
Hair band or something.
I'm not sure. Anyway, okay, Mark Kent's our guest. We're talking emergency preparedness this week. Yesterday we talked about there's, you know, you need shelter and fire and these things. Just kind of general. Now let's talk about some more specifics there that you can put into a into an emergency.
Yeah, I'd like to go over equipment used in a bag. You know, there's so many different types of bags. I'm going to start with a hiking bag. You know, something there where you don't have any way of you know, getting to transportation as a car or bus or anything. But you got to just take off. You know, you're out, your house is on fire, and you got to grab your bag and start walking out through the mountain. You know, so you got to start out with a good back a good backpack. excuse me. And so that's the first thing that you got to work with is get a good backpack, a good strong backpack that, you know, you can get your gear in. A knife would be my next thing to talk about. You know, you should probably have two. I like to have a little pocket knife, that a little folding pocket knife for all those little fine detail things, and also a good survival hunting knife that's a strong.
What about a one of those like a Swiss Army knife
or Leatherman?
Leatherman that has a knife and then all the little tools.
Absolutely,
on it.
That's as good as it gets. You know, but with that, you should always have a good, strong hunting knife as
right.
well, you know, because there's so many different, they have two different uses. One is, like I say, the fine detail stuff. I prefer a hunting knife. I have a couple of them, a Gerber that has holes in it that you can strap it to the end of a pole so you can make a fishing spear out of it. And,
sure.
So there's
but those are things. Those are individual.
Absolutely. Right. Those are individual taste things that you got to look at. You might consider a GPS kit in your bag, you know, because, you know, you if you're walking out through the mountains, that would be, if, especially if you're not very good at, you know, direction and so forth, that a good GPS might be a good way to keep yourself from getting lost.
Okay, here's an important thing about a GPS. Know how to use it.
Absolutely.
This is something you can't, some people are going to pick it up and go, okay, here I am, and you're reading lat long.
Yeah.
And you have no idea then where you're at.
Yeah, you want to learn how to do that before you're out there in the wilderness. You know, you might want to experiment a little bit with tracking yourself and so forth. And they've got some good ones out there on the market that with just a little bit of effort, you can learn how to use them pretty good. Two-way radios would be something to think about. You know, those little short family two-way radios are good. I would even, you know, personally, I have a ham shortwave radio, a ham radio that's a handheld, and that just reaches out there, and you can hit the repeaters around here. You have to be licensed to do that, but, you know, it's something to consider. A radio that you can crank up or have battery, you know, if it's a battery radio, that's fine, but preferably you would want to get one that cranks up by hand so you don't have to use batteries, so it you never have to worry about the batteries going dead. A solar charger, I have a solar charger that you can charge batteries up. It's just a little pocket solar charger. And the crank radio I have is a Sea Crane, and you can crank that radio up. So now you got AM, FM weather stations, and also there's a UBS cord that connects to your cell phone. So if your cell phone's dead, you can crank that up and charge your cell phone. So they got some really neat gadgets out there now that, you know, are worth looking at. And those are only about $40.
There's so much stuff, and we're going to take a break here. There's so much material and equipment and everything out there now available because people are actually starting to look at this.
Absolutely.
And get serious about it. Just, you know, just looking at the websites and just how many hundreds and hundreds of websites are about how to you know, survive an emergency.
Absolutely.
And the thing that, and why we're having this again, is how many of us think about it, and it's something we don't want to think about. Oh, my gosh, you know, I don't want to think about this happening, but, you know, it can happen. Why be the one that you have to go rely on other people to take care of?
Well, and the thing is, there's so many different ways that can happen. The odds are pretty strong that something's going to happen sooner or later, whether it's fire or, you know, terrorist attack or dam breaking or, you know, a financial emergency. I mean, there's just so many different ways that something can happen with this. So it's something to really think about.
Okay. It's Carl Lindebott, KCNR. Our guest is Mark Kent, and we're talking about emergency preparedness this week. What's the best way of being ready to handle an emergency? Join us after these messages. KCNR, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's on assignment today. It's 8:43 in the morning on April the 19th. It's 53 degrees out there. It's going to be a good day. Weather's always brought to you by Anselmo's. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Just besides having Espresso Joe's, which is a great place to get your morning coffee or any type of drink there by the girls. And you can also buy espresso coffee beans or gourmet coffee beans at a great price.
And, of course, over there is a fine, fine, fine walk-in humidor. If you like cigars, and I do, well, that's the place to get them at. That's Tobacco and Brew, and that's where we're going to be Friday at 12 noon to be displaying all this equipment, all these handouts. So pass this word on to your friends and come on down. We're going to be videotaping it also. So we can make, you know, have some a little bit more kind of for another takeaway later on. Our guest, Mark Kent, and we're talking about the things that could be in the go bag.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. I guess we should probably go into camp next. I mean, the next thing to think about is if you got to stay out in the wilderness or the woods or down the street, you know, or camping in the front of the grammar school down the street.
Well, that's the other thing too, is people don't realize is just because you can't stay in your home, but you may not even have to leave out of the city limits, but
Correct. You're
still going to need to be able to shelter someplace.
Yeah, I mean,
if they don't have this
could happen in the middle of a rainstorm, for example, or there's so many different scenarios. So shelter would be the first thing that I would think about, and probably some sort of a hatchet or some way to chop wood up so that you could start a fire, because, you know, whether it's cold or not, it's nice to be able to cook things sometimes so that you can eat. So that would be the next thing. After that, I would start looking at health and hygiene. Now, I talked to my sister, who has a thyroid problem, yesterday, and she said that she was able to get her doctor to give her a 3-month supply. It took some, she had to talk to him several times about it, but she basically said, you know, what happens if there's an emergency, we have an extended problem of getting medical supplies? What am I going to do without my thyroid medicine? And so she was able to actually get a 3-month supply. So that's something that the people that have diabetes or thyroid problems,
sure,
or things like that, that they need to think about having a little bit better supply of their medicine.
You know, and that's a huge question. Let's go to the phones first. We've got a question on GPS. Nicole, welcome to KCNR.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your information. Mark, I would like to ask you, where would a person get a pocket GPS?
Oh, there's so many different places, but Cabela's would be a good place to start looking. I have what's called a Trek, a Garmin Trek, and that was about $200 or $300. I don't remember the exact price, but they have a wide variety of these things that you can get. Cabela's, cheaper than dirt. You might look on eBay. Any kind of a hunting or fishing store should have them. So I would probably start online and then start looking at, you know, what kind you want to get, how sophisticated do you want it to be. A simple pocket one is probably what I'd recommend. They even have some at, I've seen them at Costco, where they sell these little $50 GPS units that you could use out there as an emergency to track where you're going and have yourself pinpointed. So that's what I would do, is I would start there. I would start at probably Cabela's and work my way in.
All right. Thank you so much.
And, Nicole, also, you know, they've got wristwatch GPSs. They've got all types of things. But the basic thing you need is something, a GPS that's going to show you where you are.
Yep.
And if you say, hey, I want to go to, I need to go to Red Bluff, you know, that you can scan out and go that, and it'll give you a route to get there.
Absolutely.
And help you go in that direction and everything.
I know they're wonderful in cars that I don't drive. So.
Well, I've never used one in the car really very much, but I've been out in Oregon hunting elk and have experimented with them on several times. And I'll tell you, it's pretty hard to get lost if you know how to use one.
And that's the big thing, is if somebody says, where are you? That's the other thing, is where are you? And you can, you know, hit your GPS and say, this is where I'm at, people can find you.
Yeah, you can pinpoint yourself with in relationship to a topo map, so other people can figure out exactly where you're at if they need to come get you.
Wow, sounds like high technology.
Look, if I can figure it out, Nicole, I know you can. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
So the next thing we should think about is hygiene on top of the first aid. You know, toilet paper is something that you should always have in your backpack. I mean, if nothing else, for the comfort of it.
Well, it's a lot better than duct tape.
Absolutely. And leaves really are kind of not that great. So I would definitely have some toilet paper in your bag. The next thing I would start to think about would be hydration, which is probably the most important thing that you can have, is some kind of a water filter or pocket. They have water pouches on some of these 3-day backpacks, but some kind of way to remove bacteria and so that you can have some drinking water. You can even strain water through cloth or even use coals out of the fire. as a filter, a charcoal filter, if it comes down to it, a cheesecloth, a piece of that, you know, you can take part of the fire coals, crush up the coals into the cheesecloth and run your water through that, and that is actually not a bad filter in an emergency. So that's another thing you need to think about is water. The next thing would be
food. Which is probably one of the most important
things. Absolutely.
To think about.
Right. Absolutely. So I carry a little water filter. They make these things that they look like one of those shake mixers, and they have little carbon filters in them, and you know, they're just a little bottle about, you know, the size of a quart, and you can just put your water in there, and it filters the water as you drink it, and they're real basic, real simple, but it's a heck of a lot better than nothing if you're out there trying to drink out of a horse hoof.
That's
friend,
there,
you know?
Yeah, the old horse hoof.
Yeah, hey, I had to mention that. So
let's go to the phones. Mike, good morning. You're on KCNR.
Hey. Good morning, Carl. Thanks again for your service to our country.
Thank you.
A quick question in reference to the food. I see and I hear a lot of the advertisements for the food. Come buy this food online for $200, $300, $400, and it's got a 20-year shelf life. And it seems like it's the advertising that's preying on people's fears, and especially people a little over 40 will just say that they're preying on those fears and of the unknown. So I'm wondering if that's a ripoff, that's worth it. If I can go ahead and get the dehydrated stuff or the MREs, that kind of stuff, which I'm sure, Carl will tell you, I'm sure that stuff has a longer shelf life than 20 years. And any comments you have or anything like that, I'll take it off the air. But thank you very much.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the question. I tell you what, let's take a quick break and come back and answer that. But, you know, this is a real good point you've made because, just like I said, there's so many people getting into this emergency preparedness and they're throwing a lot of stuff out there. What is true? And what can you do? Maybe you don't have to go out there and buy stuff, you know, and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on things.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to go.
Okay, yeah. We're going to take a quick break here. Carl and the Bot, this is Free Fire Radio.
No, I won't.
Welcome back to Free Fire.
No, I won't.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. Down. KCNR 1460, Carl and Linda Bot. Linda's been on assignment today. She'll be back tomorrow. It's 8:54 in the morning on April the 19th. It's about 53 degrees out there. It's going to be a nice day, I believe. You know, I like to say partly sunny. You know, some people will say partly cloudy, and I'll say partly sunny. Tomorrow, in case we get run out of here at the last second, we're going to have Patrick Jones will be on, Gary Cab. We're going to be talking about that city council meeting tonight. This is a huge meeting, my friends. They're going to be talking about shutting down the city hall. They're going to be talking about shutting down the convention center. One of the things about shutting down the city hall one day a week changes city workers are as far as their category.
Yeah.
There's a classification that can make them three-quarters employees. If that happens, we're talking about a huge change in what happens to how much they have to pay into their health benefits and their retirement. So this is a pretty big meeting at 6:00 tonight down at the city council meeting down there, of course, at City Hall. You might want to go down there. Also going to talk about shutting down the convention center, another idea that is an interesting idea. Okay, we've got 5 minutes left. Okay, great question by Mike about the food. Let's just hit that before we have to.
Yeah, you know, when you're doing this food thing, as far as getting your supplies together, you have to be real careful because there are a lot of predatory survivalist .com guys out there that are just overcharging on everything. So, you know, we'll have a lot of the stuff that we've tried on Friday at the Tobacco and Brew, and you're welcome to look at what we've done. We've worked with the Latter-day Saints group in Chico. They have a really good store down there, and they're just trying to help people become self-reliant. They got the food's great, stores for up to 25 years. So you have to do your homework out there is the deal, because you have to see the value. Costco's another place that we've bought an emergency supplies through. The Shelf Reliance is that's a good place to go. For your backpack, I recommend also going to the Mountain House folks, and they have the backpack meals. They're absolutely delicious. I mean, the first time I ate them, you know, I went out there hunting, and we spent the night out on a ridge at a spike camp, and I had these things, and I was thinking, well, I hope they taste good. And, you know, that you just open the bag, pour hot water in, and seal them up, let them, you know, cook, and all you need is a fork, and I'll tell you, the bacon, eggs, and potatoes are good.
Okay, MREs. Let's just talk a little bit about, you mentioned MREs. Yes. I don't know what the shelf life is on MREs. I really don't.
I think it's indefinite.
You know, it could be, but I've had the old C-Rats. I came up through C-Rats, which you don't want, and then to the MREs, to the early MREs, which are a little strange. But the ones now, you're absolutely right, Mike and Mark and Bad Bob, we were talking about it. These MREs, you just open them up and you can eat them.
Yeah, they're good.
I mean, you don't have to cook them. Are they better warm? Yes.
Did you ever get the Vienna sausages? You know, when you were
C-Rats. Yeah.
They were awful. I couldn't eat them things.
We got 3 minutes left, but we can talk about that all day long.
Sorry.
I tell you, one time I opened up the spaghetti one day, and the first 2 inches of it was just fat. And I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, so
yeah, you're hungry. You know, I mean,
you know, you just scoop that part off, give it to whoever give it to somebody else. Somebody will always
preferably
eat it.
A lower rank.
Yeah. Anyway, we always ate last in the field if you're an officer. Trust me. We've only got a couple minutes left here. What are we going to be talking about tomorrow? Go a little bit deeper into what happens if we have to leave for more than 24 to 72 hours.
Well, then what
we want to talk about?
We want to talk about a longer period, extended period of stay, out of your house or even in your house, so that
That's a good point. In your house, what to do? Because what if there is no electricity or gas or the water's not running, but you can still stay in your house?
Absolutely,
that's a huge thing. Okay, that's tomorrow, and also now on Thursday, and we're going to start this tomorrow about 7:15 tomorrow morning, go till 8, our emergency preparedness. Now, on Thursday, we're going to have Red Cross in here starting at 7:30 to talk about their programs, and the 8 o'clock, of course, Chief Peter Hansen, and then Friday, we're going to finish up with Mark. We're going to be talking about things that are available, but also financial.
Financial preparedness in a financial emergency, which in some cases can be almost as, if not worse in some ways, than a natural disaster. I mean, you go back and look at the Weimar Republic and the hyperinflation that they had and things like that, you start to realize that sometimes these financial disasters are worse.
That's right. Now, the other thing we'll talk about, too, is a little bit about personal defense of your home.
Absolutely.
This is a full show about just trying to defend your home, but we want to talk about some basics, how to harden your home like that in case something does happen, and we do have people kind of roaming the streets. You hope that never happens, but you always want to, again, be prepared.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Mark, can't wait till tomorrow we get into this. Also, remember, tonight, big thing at the City Hall, and we're going to have on Patrick Jones tomorrow to be talking about what happened, along with Gary Cadd, talking about what happens if the City Hall shuts down one day a week. And talking about the convention center. That should be an interesting show also tomorrow. You know, we're just trying, we put out things that we believe that, one, helps our community and keeps our community informed. That's why we're here at KCNR. That's why we're here at Free Fire Radio. Bad Bob.
Sir.
Another day.
Another day, another dollar.
Okay, just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Well, which are you?
You've been listening to KCNR, Shasta Redding.